All right, we're going to take a look at Ruth chapter 1 as we take another look at our study of favorite Bible chapters. Ruth chapter 1. Notice what it says. We'll read the entire chapter and then get into the lesson. Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled, and when the judges ruled, the whole thing was every man did that which was what? Right in their own eyes. That there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. Now, every time I read that Chilion, I'm thinking of food. I'm thinking of a good pot of chili. But that's not what has anything to do with this. But that's where my thoughts wander. Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah, and they came to the country of Moab and continued there. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. And they took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. And they dwelled there about 10 years. And Mahlon and Chilion died, also both of them, and the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab how that the Lord had visited his people and given them bread. Wherefore she went forth out of the place where she was and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on their way to return unto the land of Judah. And Naomi said unto her two daughters-in-law, go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as ye have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant you that she may find rest, each of you in the house of her husband. And she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice and wept. And they said unto her, surely we will return with thee unto thy people. And Naomi said, turn again, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Turn again, my daughters, go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. And if you look later on, she's called Mara, and she's too bitter to have one too. If I should say I have hope, if I should have a husband also tonight, and should also bear sons, would you tarry for them till they were grown? Would you stay for them having husbands? Nay, my daughters, for it grieveth me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. And they lifted up their voice and wept, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. And she said, behold, thy sister-in-law has gone back unto her people and unto her gods. Return thou after thy sister-in-law. And Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also, if aught but death part thee and me. When she saw that she was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. So they two went until they came to Bethlehem. And it came to pass, when they were come to Bethlehem, that all the city was moved about them. And they said, is this Naomi? And she said unto them, call me not Naomi, call me what? Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. Why then call ye me Naomi, seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me? So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of barley harvest. Now, one of the most interesting books in all the Bible is the book of Ruth. In the first chapter, we really read about backsliding and its consequences. The story is as follows. There's a guy by the name of Elimelech, and there's a woman by the name of Naomi, and they both live in Bethlehem, Judah. Well, there's a famine that comes into the land, so Naomi and Elimelech take their two boys, Mahlon and Chilion, into Moab, and they go there for the purpose of finding food. Mahlon and Chilion later on married two Moabite girls named Orpah and Ruth. Now, this family did not intend to stay in Moab. They went to sojourn. They went to just to pass through, just to get some food. However, they stayed for 10 years. And during that time, Elimelech dies, Mahlon dies, and Chilion dies, leaving Naomi with her two daughters-in-laws, Orpah and Ruth. Now, these three widows face the future without their husbands. So Naomi decides, you know what? She's going back to Bethlehem. Well, Ruth decides she's going to go with her. Orpah decides she's going to stay in Moab. Now, notice in verse 1, notice what it says. Now, it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was what? A famine in the land. Now, oftentimes you read in the Bible that a famine came upon the land of Israel for what? Judgment due to the people's sin. And you know, you see that time and time again. Now, that land was supposed to be a land of what? Flowing with milk and honey. That land was supposed to be good for cattle. But you know what? When the people sinned, God brought judgment to that land. And oftentimes, he did so in the form of a famine. No doubt the people of God had sinned. And they were being punished for their iniquities. Folks, we need to remind ourselves that sin never brings a blessing. It always brings a curse. Always. Then notice it talks about Bethlehem, Judah. And a certain man of what? Bethlehem, Judah. Now that word Bethlehem, you know what that means? It means house of bread. House of bread. Now that's interesting, isn't it? Now the people, these guys, they thought they were going to Moab for bread. When the truth is, they lived in the house of bread. Now, it's tragic, but often true. Christians do not realize the joy there is in living and serving God. You know, to them, the world always looks better. The grass is always greener on the other side. But I'm going to tell you, you know, Jesus not only came to give us life, right? But life what? More abundantly. You know, when you live for Christ like you ought to, you don't want to be sojourning in Moab. You don't want to get backslidden. You want to keep your eyes on Jesus. You want your cup to remain full and overflowing. And that's the kind of life that he promises us. But you know what? So many will leave the house of bread and they find bread in a place where they don't belong, where satisfaction cannot be found, and the experience and what they experience there, just like what happened to Naomi, embitters them. How many of you have known a Christian been out for in the world for years? How many know that at one time they were pleasant people to be around? But now what? They're bitter. Do you want to be around them? Not really. You know, when I read this story, I always find, you know, what in the world did Ruth see in Naomi? She's bitter. She's haggard. I'd be like, man, goodbye. You know, see you later. But I wouldn't go with her. But thank God she had a love for her mother-in-law. A mother-in-law. Then notice the trip to Moab. Now in the Bible, the Moab is a type of sin. It's a type of place you go to when you're backsliding. Now the Moabites, where'd they come from? Well, they were descendants of Lot and his daughter when they committed that awful sin in that cave after Sodom and Gomorrah had been destroyed by fire. Lot was guilty of incest with his daughter. And from that unholy union came the Moabites. And you know what other ones? Ammonites. Now, hence the Moabites in the Bible, basically Moab, it all pictures the world. Now, when God's people left the land of promise to go to the land of Moab, it was considered to be one who was backsliding. Then notice the duration, also found in verse 1. Now, it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and what? His two sons. Now, they came to what? Sojourn. Right? Now, you know what that means? It means they were only planning on staying for a little while. Now, it means to pass through. They had no intentions of staying in Moab. Now, that seems to always be the case. You know, people never intend to go into sin for a long time. They just want to try it once. And then before they know it, Satan ensnares them, and they are living in a backslidden condition in a place known as Moab. The truth is, they stayed 10 years. Now, how many think that's a sojourn? No, that's a settlement. This was quite a long time. Now, how tragic and how true is the fact that we intend just to try sin just once, even though we should never touch the unclean thing? You know, how many people used to smoke? All right, look at all you people. Now, here's the thing. I'm one of them. Were you addicted the first time you took that first puff? No. How many of you liked that first cigarette or first pack or whatever? Really, you liked it from the very first. You're kind of unusual there, Tina. Most people are choking, turning green, and it's just not good. But you know what? Peer pressure was there, right? And you kept on doing it, and soon you found yourself what? Hooked or addicted. Isn't that how it is? You know, I remember being with this guy one time, and he was an alcoholic. And but we were sitting there at dinner, and this nurse found out he was an alcoholic. And he says, and she said, "Well, you couldn't help it. You were born that way." And I'm sitting right next to him, and I started laughing. I said, "You can't be serious." She said, "Oh, yeah, he was born an alcoholic." And I looked at him. I said, "Hey, Chuck," I said, "is that true? Did you become an alcoholic before you took your first drink?" He said, "No." I said, "Huh. So you weren't born that way?" No! He became an alcoholic because he took that first drink. Then he took that second drink. And then finally the drink took hold of him. You're not born that way. Everybody wants to say that today. They want an excuse for their sinful addictions. Yet you know what? You would never be addicted to anything unless you did it the very first time and then repeated that action and repeated it until you became addicted. Now, I'm not saying there's some things that you can't get addicted with the first time, but these things you've done repeatedly to be addicted. Then notice the companions. Notice they didn't go alone. You got Naomi, you got Elimelech, and then it's, you know, it says, and his what? Two sons. He, his wife, and his two sons. Now, did Elimelech go to Moab alone? No. He took his whole family with him. You ever notice no one really backslides alone? You always take somebody with you. And that's a sad thing, isn't it? When we leave God, we influence others and take them with us. Just think. Maybe you're a father, maybe you're a head of the home, and you backslide. Now, is that going to influence your wife? Will it influence your children? It sure will. And you know, oftentimes a head of the home gets out of church, and guess what happens? It ain't too long for the rest of everybody. They get out of church. And then they find themselves doing things they should never be doing. What if a wife gets out of church? You think it's going to influence her husband? You think it's going to affect their marriage? You think it's going to influence the children? You betcha. What if you have a really good friend in church and you get, you know, your nose rankled because the preacher mentioned your sin? And so you, I ain't putting up with this. You know, well, he's actually trying to help you, but that's not the way you take it. And so you get out of church, and guess who's going to be affected by that? Your good friend. He's going to be affected by it. You know what we, you know, no man is an island. We influence plenty of other people, whether we realize it or not. You say, no man's an island? Yeah, well, you know what? Butter being in a hot tub might be, but that's okay. How many know who Butterbean is? Okay. It's not a good picture, is it? But anyways, we always take somebody with us. You know, our sin influences other people, whether we realize it or not. You don't even have to get out of church. You can just be in sin and it influences other people. Notice the name Elimelech. Now, the name Elimelech, his name actually means, my God is king. That's what it means. Now, don't you think that's rather hypocritical? My God is king. Was God his king? No! If God was his king, what is he doing in Moab? Now, perhaps, and most likely, he was saved. But he left the will of God for his life. And he traveled outside the will of God. He's a backslider staying in Moab, and yet he's staying by his name, my God is king. Now, if I was one of the people that knew him, and I knew he was there for a while, and you know what he was telling me, you know, I found out what his name meant, I'd be saying, hey, what are you doing here? If God is your king, why aren't you back home? If God is your king, what you doing living in Moab? You know, being a hypocrite is sinful. You say, surely there's no hypocrites anymore, are there, preacher? Yeah, there are, and that's sad. You know, you don't know how many times I introduce myself or I'm out soul winning and someone tell, and they know where I, you know, that I pastor a church and I invite them to come after I try to witness to them. And you know what they tell me? I ain't going there. There's too many hypocrites. Now listen. You know what I tell them? I said, well, we always got room for one more. I said, you know what? What you're saying is hypocritical. You go to Walmart, you don't think there's any hypocrites at Walmart? I said, you go to the gas station, you don't think there's hypocrites at the gas station? I said, you seem to pick and choose. I said, you go to work, don't you? No hypocrites there, are there? Now, the fact of the matter is, we shouldn't be hypocrites. We're supposed to be true. We're supposed to be honest. And what's on the inside ought to show up on the outside. You know, it's one thing to have a good name because it's rather to be chosen in great riches, but a different matter altogether to have a life that doesn't correspond to that name. Now, Elimelech's name means God is king. Man, that was an impressive name that his parents gave him. But he didn't live up to that name. For had he truly believed God was his king, he would have stayed in Bethlehem despite the famine. Wasn't Abraham rebuked for going down to Egypt during the famine? How many think God could have took care of Abraham and Canaan even if he didn't go down to Egypt during the famine? How many think Elimelech and Naomi and their two sons could have been taken care of in Bethlehem if they didn't bail and go to Moab? How many think it would have been better for them to just park their carcass right there in Bethlehem, Judah? They seem to have happy feet, don't they? You know, a lot of people have that problem. Things get a little tough in the area in which they live, and what's the first thing they want to do? They want to move. And you know, they move to a place and never even checked out whether there's any good solid churches there or anything. But you know what's making their decision? Earl's got it. Finances. Finances. Everything depends upon the dollar. And they follow the almighty dollar instead of almighty God. And you know what? Maybe God had a place for them right where they were at. And maybe he's trying to teach them a lesson. You know, I thought we were supposed to operate by faith. And you know what? They don't even pray about it. I remember years ago, somebody was going to leave a good job. They were making good money. And they came up to me and they asked, they said, "Preacher, what I can do? What should I do? I can make an extra dollar a week." Or not dollar a week, dollar an hour. So it'd be $40 a week. I said, "Well, you happy here with your job?" "Oh, yeah, I'm happy." I said, "So you're willing to go back to the place where you worked, where really was no good folks there?" "Well, yeah, but you know what? I can get an extra dollar a week and I can shine my light there and win those folks to Christ." I said, "I wouldn't do it." I said, "You're off on the weekends. You're in church faithfully. Your hours work out great." Guess what he did? He took that extra dollar a week, a dollar an hour. And you know where that ended him up? Within months, he was divorced. He was cheating on his wife. What happened to that light you were going to shine in that dark place? Was it worth that dollar or an hour? Got out of church. Basically led a rebellion here. We lost half our church because these people followed that Pied Piper. None of that would have happened had he took some advice. Now, I don't know why people come and ask me my advice when they have no intention of taking heed. I really don't. Spare us the time. Are you just looking for my opinion? If your mind's already made up, don't waste your breath. Go on with yourself. But that's what happened. Incredible, isn't it? I wonder how many of us realize the name we carry. We're called what? Do we live up to that name? Do we? It does mean Christ-like, doesn't it? Do we live up to that name in our homes? How about when we're driving? I mean, we can exclude that, can't we? How about the way you treat other people? Do we follow that golden rule? Or do we think that we can get away with it, treating them because we can bully them a little bit? What does your spouse think of your Christianity? Would she recommend it to anybody else? What's a priority in our life? Is it our walk with God? What is it? We call ourselves Christians. We can look at Elimelech and say, man, what a bum. He should have known better. Well, shouldn't we? Aren't we given a manual of instructions on how to live? And yet we dismiss it like it's no big deal. Christian, we're supposed to live up to that name, are we not? And you know what? Other people ought to call us Christians because they see the life of Christ being manifested in our life. And if we got to tell them, there's something wrong with our Christianity. It's kind of like this. Every man that beats his chest like some silverback ape and says, I'm the head of my house. Mark it down. They ain't. They're not. They may be fooled into thinking they are, but they're the only ones who deceived. Elimelech didn't live up to his wonderful name. We got a better name. Are we living up to it? And going down to Moab, he stepped out of the will of God who had forbidden his people to have any association with the Moabites. In Moab, Elimelech and his sons found graves. Elimelech lost his life while seeking a livelihood and found a grave where he sought a home. Although the land of Moab may sound remote, you know, here it is. It's only 30 miles away from where he lived. But it was a whole different culture, whole different language. Everything was different down in Moab. It was a long enough journey in those days when there was no modern form of transportation. The distance, however, was not that one of miles. It was one of the mind. Turned his back on the promised land for Moab. Distances in the Bible are not measured from one place to another in the Bible, but they are measured in distance from God. Then notice the name Naomi. Look at verse 2 through 4. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and his name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they came into the country of Moab, and what? Continued there. They started liking it. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left of her two sons. And they took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah. Orpah. And the name of the other, Ruth. And they dwelled there about what? 10 years. Now, that word, the name Naomi, means pleasant. Pleasant. However, when she turns to Bethlehem, after being backslidden for 10 years, she asked the people of Bethlehem to change her name to what? Mara. Mara means bitter. And that's what sin does. When backsliding starts, you may go out pleasant, but you always come back what? Bitter. Bitter. You know what? It's funny. It's not funny. But anyways, who she blames for all this? She blames God. Now, was this God's fault? Not at all. Did he tell them to move down to Moab? No. And yet he gets the blame for every bad thing that seems to happen. You know, I think these people were Baptists and not Jews. Why does God get the blame for all this? We make our own choices. We don't consult him. We don't do his will. And then we expect everything to turn up roses. And then when they don't, we get mad at God.
Because after all, we can't be accountable for what we chose to do. He ought to bless and rubber stamp everything we got planned. Well, you wouldn't say that out loud because any godly person would be aghast at you saying that, but perhaps that's how some of us live.
It was not long before Naomi discovered her error in leaving Bethlehem. For in that new heathen land, nothing but misfortune dogged her footsteps. First, we read of Elimelech. He died. Now, he was hoping to go to Moab and escape death from the famine. So he leaves his wife a widow in the land of idolaters. So she decides, after losing her husband and her two boys, that she's going to return to Bethlehem, for all her relatives and friends were there. So she leaves for Bethlehem, not so much because of the cup of sorrow in Moab, but because she heard that the Lord visited his people and given them bread. No. Do you think he would have gave them bread if they stayed? Do you think other people stayed in Bethlehem, Judah, and he took care of them? It doesn't say she came back to an empty city with a bunch of corpses. There were still people there. They survived. When she enters the city, there was quite a stir. As it passed from lip to lip, that Naomi was back after 10 years. And they cried, "Is this Naomi?" How many think her appearance changed? They probably couldn't believe this is the same person that left. "Is this Naomi?" And she replies, "Call me not Naomi, call me Mara." That was an easy transition. She's now an old hag. That's in the Hebrew, by the way. Now, Naomi could not bear the contradiction between the name she once bore and now the person she had become. 10 years in Moab, with all its anguish, the loss of fellowship with God and his people, dried up any finer qualities she had when she left. She was one time sweet. Now she's sour. And she blames God for the poverty and desolation that she endured. Was not her cup of bitterness the result of her own act of disobedience? With her husband, she left Bethlehem for Moab. If she stayed where she should have been and maintained her trust in God, he would have saw that family through that famine and he would have blessed them. He would have undertaken for them. But when they went to Moab, Moab was a journey away from God. And consequently, her bitterness was the fruit of her disobedience. Now, her appearance seems to have changed, hasn't it? People are wondering, "Is this Naomi?" You ever notice people that are in sin for any length of time, 10 years? Their appearance changes, doesn't it? You know, sin takes a toll on the body. It ages you quicker. And no doubt that was taking place in the life of Naomi. I'll never forget one time I was out soul winning. And I remember this knocking on this guy's door. He invited me in, and he happened to be a truck driver. And I'm sitting there talking to him, and who I thought was his mother.
And she was a heavy smoker. And she looked like prune face. Now, I thought that was his mom. You know, I thought she was like 90 years old, and he happened to look like he was 50. She looked like she'd been beat up. I was just like, and I said, well, would your mom like to hear the gospel? And she said, Mom, I'm his wife. I'm like, oh, I didn't realize that. Sorry. You know, I learned that day, you don't say anything about a relationship until you know what it is. It's kind of like asking a rather large woman when she's due. You just don't do that. Has anybody made those mistakes? Okay, I'm not the only one. But it takes a toll, doesn't it? Sure it does. You know, while she's there, she loses Mahlon. Now, Mahlon, his name means sick. So no doubt he was probably a sickly child. And then the name Chilion means pining, melancholy. Yeah, that word. And sad. What a joy he must have been. How would you like to be named sad? You know, there's probably a reason. I shouldn't say that. But sad, do you know anybody who's always sad? How many just can't wait to be around them? It's horrible, isn't it? It just sucks the life out of you. But here you got Mahlon and Chilion. One's sick, one means sad. What a happy family. Maybe that's why they left Bethlehem, Judah. The rest of them didn't want nothing to do with them. I'm only kidding. But, you know, then you see the death that happened. Devastated the family. All because, you know what? They got outside the will of God. It took a toll on that family. But, you know, the good thing is Ruth loved her mother-in-law. And you read that about the rest of the story in the book of Ruth, how Ruth took care of Naomi, how she even bore a son as she got married to Boaz, and how that brought life back to Naomi. And she became pleasant once again. So there's hope for you sad sack, bitter backsliders. All right, with that, we'll... All right. On that cheery note, we'll dismiss.